For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, with the latest readout video from our free Wednesday Wake Up email newsletter, to which you should subscribe if you don't already, as you should support our work if you don't already, including, and thank you very much, all the people who have clicked the thanks button here on YouTube. And then, greetings to viewers in the Philippines, who've edged out Portugal to reach number 19 in our all-time list of views by jurisdiction. Close alphabetically, they almost couldn't be further apart geographically, and we really appreciate how many people in so many places are watching our videos, including Bill Gates. At least, the Microsoft founding billionaire and would-be do-gooder certainly sounds as if he just watched our documentary In the Dark, Senegal as a Case Study in Energy Poverty, because on the eve of COP30, he suddenly blurted out, specifically addressing all the would-be do-gooders flying in jet airplanes to Brazil to denounce carbon, that humans face a lot of far more serious problems on this planet than tiny temperature increases, especially poor human beings. Many climate activists are furious and seem suddenly to have discovered that we shouldn't have been listening to Gates back when he was one of them or something. We, by contrast, are happy and encouraged because it's more evidence that for all people's failings and foibles, they are mostly logical and virtuous, if sometimes agonizingly slowly. The great strength of open societies is that vigorous debate does get us to the truth. And so we welcome Bill Gates with open arms and anyone else with open minds who gets it. Suddenly, slowly, or slowly, then suddenly. To be clear, Gates hasn't actually said that climate change isn't real, man-made, or a problem. All he's doing is calling for a sense of proportion. Hence this blinding flash of feeble light. Quote, if you said to me, hey, what about 0.1 degrees versus malaria eradication? I'll let the temperature go up 0.1 degrees to get rid of malaria. People don't understand the suffering that exists today, end quote. Yeah, and we could ask snidely who distracted them from it. But instead, we want to help him continue in his journey to true proportion. Including, as Michael Schellenberger quoted Judith Curry on this very subject, quote, the weakest part of the argument has always been that warming is dangerous. It isn't really. More people die from the cold than the heat. So this is probably a net benefit globally. Where's the danger here? End quote. Still, one thing at a time. Once you start believing and saying that there are better ways to prepare the poor for weather, even the warmer stuff, like making them less poor or less sick, there's no telling where it might lead, and there's no telling who might follow you. And now, we interrupt the program for a word from our sponsor, which as always is you. We haven't asked for a while. I don't like doing it. You don't like hearing it. But these videos don't make themselves. You know, we don't have big fancy budgets. We film here in my study or downstairs in my living room. And the only reason we can do it at all is because of contributions from people like you. So please, if you haven't already, make a pledge one time or monthly so we can get back to doing what we love best, which is this. In the newsletter, we also continued our Hurricane Melissa watch. As it approached Jamaica, the New York Times of the morning hyperboled us that, quote, the nation's prime minister warned that no country in the Caribbean could withstand a storm this powerful, end quote. Reuters Sustainable Switch crowed, quote, the strongest storm on record ever to hit the Caribbean island nation blasted western Jamaica, demolishing homes, knocking down swaths of trees, and washing out roadways, end quote. Fortunately, Jamaica did withstand it, with mercifully very minor loss of life compared to various past hurricanes, including in 1903 and 1951. Nevertheless, the parent Reuters went even further with, quote, the strongest ever hurricane to directly hit Jamaica's shores, end quote. But just because nobody measured the wind speed of the 1722 monster that killed hundreds doesn't mean it wasn't fast. And it's hard to defend the notion of climate change making hurricanes more common, as well as more deadly, if you look at the record, not the hype. And in that regard, we also give a small nod to Inside Climate News for emailing that one of their reporters, quote, traveled to North Sumatra, Indonesia, home to one of the world's rarest species, the Tapanuli orangutan. Fewer than 800 of these apes remain, living in a mountain range no bigger than Los Angeles. They already face steep odds. Gold mining, palm oil plantations, and hunting have all chipped away at their habitat. But now a Chinese-owned hydroelectric dam is being built right in the middle of it, end quote. Good for them for noticing and saying that red-green power is sometimes a lot worse than the problem it allegedly addresses. And another thing, speaking of bad, English wines are the punchline to many jokes, including, did you hear the one about the medieval warm period when French producers sought trade barrier protection from Welsh claret? Hilarious. But since the Times reports, quote, dry summer produces unicorn vintage for English winemakers, end quote, with, quote, ideal growing conditions for grapes, end quote, it might be worth considering that back when England had one splendid vintage after another, it might have been warmer than today? Drat that historical evidence. Positively spoils the misery. Then in the newsletter, we present more evidence that Bill Gates' gingerly drift toward climate pragmatism indicates a real turning of the tide. Thanks to Blacklock's reporter, we learned that the Canada Energy Regulator, nay, the National Energy Board, just put out a commentary ensuring future power grid reliability that offered this welcome sanity, quote, trends driving increased demand include electricity's projected role in decarbonization efforts, with growing electrification of end uses like increased electric vehicle use and heat pump adoption. Meeting this rising electricity demand could be a reliability challenge, end quote. Gosh, you think? In plain language, green power equals blackouts, including a midwinter near disaster in Alberta last year that the report commendably does cite. Told you so. And weirdly, so did the BBC, reporting that in the Netherlands, quote, in a Dutch government TV campaign called Flip the Switch, an actress warns viewers about their electricity usage. When we all use electricity at the same time, our power grid gets overloaded, she says. This can cause malfunctions. So use as little electricity as possible between 4 and 9. It is a sign that, in one of the most advanced economies in the world, something has gone wrong with the country's power supply, end quote. Oh, something has it? And whatever can it be? Since the BBC and others have been blaring that alternatives are cheaper and more reliable than fossil fuels and will enhance rather than disrupting your lifestyle. Aside from the bit where you can't afford your power bill and have to cook between meals and do laundry in the middle of the night and that kind of thing. Not everyone gets it, though. And one of the problems they often have is a failure to grasp how big the planet is and how slow yet inexorable things like ocean currents are, or, well, to understand scale generally. For instance, scientific alarmism asks, quote, can we bury enough wood to slow climate change, end quote. And while the answer is obviously, no, of course not, you fools, they say yes. Quote, wood vaulting, a simple, low-tech approach to storing carbon, has the potential to remove 12 billion tons of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere every year, and some companies are already trying it, end quote. Meanwhile, out there in the real forest, nature has been burying a bunch of wood since before there was oil from buried plants. While estimates of the scale of the carbon cycle vary, suppose that it's reasonable to say humans produce 30 gigatons out of the 750 gigatons total. Is it then reasonable to say that us throwing logs into a hole can dispose of 40% of all the emissions from factories, farms, land use, and windbags? So, if we get extra busy with wood chips and toothpicks and tongue depressors and golf tees as well, and bury enough to cover half of human emissions, we'll be at net zero? Anyone who thinks so doesn't realize how big the Earth is compared to, say, an old axe handle or even an entire tree. Of course, the Canadian government long claimed that by planting 2 billion of the things in a country that by itself is now estimated to contain over 300 billion, it would fix the weather worldwide. Not that it could actually plant them. And while it could certainly talk, it apparently couldn't really count, since adding 2 billion trees to 3 trillion of the things worldwide would not really make a discernible difference in their absorbing CO2, only to emit it again when they died, unless someone or something came running up and buried them, possibly with a government grant. The problem is, they couldn't grasp that the planet is big and has a lot of trees. It's that scale problem again. And speaking of scale, with most politicians, we're far from certain that they could say off the cuff how many zeros there are in a trillion, even while adding one or more of them to their national debt. This failure to grasp the scale of the Earth is also embarrassingly on display, with Canary Media perking up because, quote, roasting coffee requires high temperatures, up to 500 degrees Fahrenheit, for as much as 20 minutes per batch, end quote. And that process takes fossil fuels, which means your morning Java is wrecking the planet. But, quote, Ricardo Lopez, CEO of Bellwether Coffee, has spent the past 12 years fine-tuning a more climate-friendly, electricity-powered alternative, one that crucially cuts down on some of the costs and complexities of other electric roasters, end quote. It's an issue that one minute the wretched gas-burning ones were costly and complex, and the next it's the cool electric ones. But the big problem here is honestly believing that the fate of the biosphere could possibly depend on how we make latte. Then, from the pulverential Sickus file, did you know that there are experts on debris flow down the slopes of the Swiss Alps? Pity the academic scribbler who spends a lifetime learning everything there is to know about some topic, only to realize that most people not only don't care, they didn't even know it was a topic. Which may help explain why so many try to jazz up their work by saying it's about climate change. Not to mention that grants tend to flow in large amounts down government slopes towards such claims. Be that as it may, in our most recent Have It Both Ways, we note that a 1997 study warned that climate change would make debris flow down the Swiss Alps worse. But 9 years later, some other experts on the arcane topic of debris flow events on Swiss mountains specifically looked into the paleoclimate records and found that while DFEs since the 1500s did seem to coincide with wet periods, they were becoming less frequent recently, not more. They promptly speculated that rainfall might matter, but only at certain times of the year. Grants, by contrast, matter all year round, just as all year round on climate, you can have it both ways. And speaking of eccentricity, when tourists visit the Antarctic, they mostly visit the Antarctic Peninsula, or AP, which stretches towards South America. And there they learn about the ravages of climate change because the AP is warming, altogether now, faster than the global average, putting the delicate local ecosystems at risk, or whatever's left of them after harsh winds and massively sub-zero temperatures have done their worst. A Google search on Antarctic Peninsula warming brings up a long list of reports and studies, and the Wikipedia page includes a helpful bright red map to suggest it's fast becoming a sweltering desert or the inside of a pizza oven. But chill, everyone, because, again, hat tip to no trick zone, a recent study looking at warming and cooling patterns over Antarctica used a new satellite data product covering 2003 to 21 and calibrated with readings from actual weather stations, which, for obvious reasons, there are few of and they're unevenly spread in that harsh environment. And the result was, drumroll please, a complex pattern of local variance, with the AP in particular being mostly blue. Yep, climate is complicated, even in places where even the penguins look cold. Finally, and speaking of pulverential Sickus, from the CO2science.org archive, Trigonalophoinum graecum, or fenugreek, which is from the Latin fenugreecum, or Greek hay, is used throughout the world, but especially in India, as a seasoning in many dishes and drinks. Apparently it tastes like maple syrup, so as Canadians we say, get the real thing, not some hay. But whatever you plan to do with it, there's lots. Because in 2007 and 2020, there were 5 experiments showing that an additional 300 parts per million of atmospheric CO2 boosted fenugreek growth by an average 85.6%. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, applauding the gates of perception.